Gopi jana valava girivara dari Yashoda nandana braja jana ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi jana valava girivara dari Yashoda nandana braja jana ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki. So today we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 8. Canto 8, chapter 12, verses 17 through 21. And we'll start with verse 17. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I'll read verses 17 through 21 and we'll do 21 together. So verse 17. Shri Shuka Uvacha Iti Bruvano Bhagavams Tatraivantardiyata Sarvatascharayams Chakshur Bhava Aste Sahomaya. Shukadev Goswami continued. After speaking in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, immediately disappeared, and Lord Shiva remained there with Uma, looking for him all around with moving eyes. 18. Tato dadarsho pavane varastriyam vichitra pushparuna palava drume vikridatim kun Kanduka Lilaya Lasad Dukula Paryasta Nitamba Mekalam. Thereafter, in a nice forest nearby, full of trees with reddish pink leaves and varieties of flowers, Lord Shiva saw a beautiful woman playing with a ball. Her hips were covered with a shining sari and ornamented with a belt. 19. Avartanodvartana kampitastana prakrishta haroru barai pare pare prabhajamanam eva majat majatashchalat para pravalam nayatim tatas tataha. Because the ball was falling down and bouncing up, and she played with it. Because the ball was falling down and bouncing up, as she played with it, her breasts trembled. And because of the weight of those breasts and her heavy flower garlands, her waist appeared to be all but breaking at every step, as her two soft feet, which were reddish like coral, moved here and there. 20. Dikshu brahmat kun kanduka chapalai brisham prodvigna tarayata lola lochanam svakarna vibrachita kundalolasat ko kapola nilalaka manditananam. The woman's face was decorated by broad, beautiful, restless eyes, which moved as the balls bounced here and there from her hand. The true brilliant earrings on her ears decorated her shining cheeks like bluish reflections, and the hair scattered on her face made her even more beautiful to see. And this is 21 with repetition. Shlata dukulam kabarim chavichutam. Sanahyatim vamakarena valguna. Vinignatim anyakarena kundukam. Vimohayantim jagaratma mayaya. Salata dukalam kabarim chavinchutam. Sanahyatim vama karena valguna. Vinignatim anya karena kandukam. Vimohayantim jagaratma mayaya. Satadukulam kabarim chavinchutam. Sanahyatim vamakarena valguna. Vinignati manya karena kandukam. Vimohayantim jagaratma mayaya. Satadukulam kabiram chavichutam. Sanahyatim vama karena valguna. Ganamanya karena kundukam. Vimohayantim jagaratma mayaya. Satadukalam kabarim chavichutam. Sanahyatim vama karena valguna. Vinignatim anya karena kandukam. Vimohayantim Jagadatma Mayaya. Satadukulam Kabarim Chavichutam. Sanahyatim Vama Karina Valguna. Vinignati manya karina kandukam. Vimohayantim jagaratma mayaya. Satadugalam kabarim vachintutam. Sanahyatim vama karina valguna. Nanya karina kandukam. Vimohayantim jagaratma mayaya. Satadukulam kabarim chavichutam. Sanahyatim vama karina valguna. Vini nati manya karena kanduka. Vimo hayantim jagaratma mayaya. Shlatat. Slipping or slackening. Dukulam. The sorry. Kambarim cha. And the hair on the head. Vichutam. Being slackened and scattered. Sanahyatim. Trying to bind. Vamakarena. With the left hand. Valguna. Very beautifully attractive. Vinignatim, striking. Anyakarena, with the right hand. Kundukam, the ball. Vimohayantim, in this way captivating everyone. Jagat, the whole world. Atmamayaya, by the spiritual potency, the internal energy. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. As she played with the ball, the sari covering her body became loose and her hair scattered. She tried to bind her hair with her beautiful left hand, and at the same time she played with the ball by striking it with her right hand. This was so attractive that the Supreme Lord, by His internal potency, in this way captivated everyone. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 7.14, it is said, Daivihesha gunamayi mamamaya dirachaya. The external potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is extremely strong. Indeed, everyone is fully captivated by her activities. Lord Shambhu, Shiva, was not to be captivated by the external potency, but because Lord Vishnu wanted to captivate him, also he exhibited his internal potency to act in the way that his external potency acts to captivate ordinary living entities. Lord Vishnu can captivate anyone, even such a strong personality of Lord Shambhu. Srila Prabhupada ki. Omang yana chidamandasya jnana jnana shalakaya chakshu unmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkest of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Jayapataka Swamini Tanamini. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tanamini. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharini. Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Pastyacha Deshatarini. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I think generally it's customary to repeat all the translations one more time. So I will do that. This is 17 through 21. Shukadev Goswami continued, after speaking in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, immediately disappeared, and Lord Shiva remained there with Uma, looking for him all around with moving eyes. Thereafter, in a nice forest nearby, full of trees with reddish pink leaves and varieties of flowers, Lord Shiva saw a beautiful woman playing with a ball. Her hips were covered with a shining sari and ornamented with a belt. Because the ball was falling down and bouncing up, as she played with it, her breasts trembled, and because of the weight of those breasts, her heavy flower garlands, her waist appeared to be all but breaking at every step, as her two soft feet, which were reddish like coral, moved here and there. The woman's face was decorated by broad, beautiful, restless eyes, which moved as the ball bounced here and there from her hand. The two brilliant earrings on her ears decorated her shining cheeks like bluish reflections, and the hair scattered on her face made her even more beautiful to see. As she played with the ball, the sari covering her body became loose, and her hair scattered. She tried to bind her hair with her beautiful left hand, and at the same time, she played with the ball by striking it with her right hand. This was so attractive that the Supreme Lord, by his internal potency, in this way captivated everyone. So, Hare Krishna. In this pastime, we have Lord Vishnu in the form of Mahumurti, captivating Lord Shiva and all living entities. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that the Supreme Lord is able to captivate everyone, even Lord Shiva. And he refers to verse chapter 7, verse 14 in Bhagavad Gita, which I'd like to recite because Srila Prabhupada is quoting it. So this is chapter 7, verse 14. Daivihesha gunamayi mama maya durachaya mameva ye prapadyante mam mayam etam tarantite. This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome, but those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. In the purport of this verse, Srila Prabhupada is saying that Maya is so strong that even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are captivated by Maya. So all living entities are bewildered by this material energy, and in this case, Lord Shiva is being bewildered by Krishna himself in the form of Mohini Murti. I'd like to ask, why is it that the material energy is so bewildering? Would anyone like? Yes. Why is everyone bewildered by the material energy?
Well, I'm not sure if this is the answer that you're looking for, but one particular reason is that first of all, life couldn't continue if it wasn't so bewildering. So there's no question of human life and all life would be as extinct if it wasn't so bewildering. But I'm sure that's not the answer you're looking for. So.
Well, there's many good answers. I think this, so you were saying that one reason that's bewildering is because it keeps life going, because we're bewildered by the material energy, so it keeps us engaged in it. Am I right? Or... Mm-hmm. Any other answers why this material world is so bewildering, Marcel?
We're entangled into the modes, so we're conditioned to not only enjoy, but to lord over the material nature. So we're attached to doing that.
So we're conditioned by the modes of material nature, and we're attached to it.
As it is mentioned here, is a external energy of Krishna. And since Krishna is attractive, his energy also very attractive. To overcome is very difficult. And also those who are attached to this, they are bewildered. But those who are not attached, are not bewildered.
Yes. Thank you very much for this answer. Actually, this answer, Srila Prabhupada specifically mentions in this purport, he says that the main reason why Mahamaya is so bewildering is because it's Krishna's energy. And he refers to Krishna as the supreme magician. So we're all actually, even by being captivated by Maya, we're captivated by Krishna. And this is his external potency, and it's so powerful that we're completely captivated by it. And yes.
Not Mahamaya, this is Yogamaya. But Mahamaya is takes towards Krishna.
Yes.
Yogamaya is.
So, in our case, you're saying that there's a difference between Yogamaya and Mahamaya. So, as I understand, Mahamaya is the agents of Krishna in his external potency, bewildering the living entities, and Yogamaya is coming from Krishna's internal potency, as if I am understanding correctly. So, the difference is those who are overcome by the external potency and those who are controlled by Krishna's internal potency. And we're either in one category or the other. And those who are controlled by the external potency are controlled by the senses. And to be controlled by Yogamaya, one has to come to the platform of pure devotional service. So Krishna's very intimate devotees, they are actually completely governed by Krishna's internal potency. So, Srila Prabhupada describes, he talks about the gunas as ropes, as Marcel had mentioned, that we're bound by the three modes of material nature. And these ropes were bound, he describes it very specifically, one who is bound by his hands and legs, he cannot free himself. So the only way to become freed is to be freed by one who is not bound. So he refers to Krishna in this case. Krishna can free us. Krishna is actually beyond the modes of material nature, and Krishna's representative in the form of the spiritual master. So the recommendation is to render service unto the spiritual master and to the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord. So that was in Nectar of Instruction, there's a few verses that I think relate nicely to this topic. One is from, it's referring to the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 5, verse 30. This is Prahlad Maharaj, he's speaking, and he says, "For those who have decided to continue their existence in this material world for the gratification of their senses, there is no chance of becoming Krishna conscious, not by personal endeavor, nor instruction from others, or by joint conferences. They are dragged by the unbridled senses into the darkest region of ignorance, and thus they madly engage in what is called chewing the chewed. Charvita charvananam, chewing the chewed." So we're completely, in this material world, we're completely bewildered by our material senses. In the Bhagavad Gita, there's a picture in the middle, and it has horses. The senses are represented by these wild horses, right? And the mind is the chariot's driver of these horses. And we're riding in the cart, and we're being pulled here and there by these wild horses of the senses. And in the Nectar of Instruction, it's said that the first thing that one must do is actually control the mind and senses. So this is very important. The question is, how are we able to control our senses? So in Bhagavad Gita, there's different examples of this. And in chapter 2, verse 59, Krishna says that the senses are very difficult to control. It's practically impossible to control the senses. But by getting a higher taste, the senses become automatically under control. So, sort of a mundane example of this is, psychologists did some experiment on rats. And this was during the time of the drug, like there was like a war on drugs. Like drugs were a big problem in America. And there was two theories happening about why people are addicted to drugs. So one theory was that drugs are just innately addictive. If you take a drug, you're just automatically addicted to that drug, and that's it. So for instance, if the drug is heroin or cocaine, if you take heroin once, you become addicted, you're finished. Or cocaine, you take it, basically they're innately addictive. The second argument they proposed was that it's actually, there's something innately wrong with the person who does drugs. So someone's just innately demoniac or evil, thus they're attracted to taking drugs. And they had an experiment. So to support the first theory that drugs were just innately addictive, they had an experiment with rats to prove their point. And they had a bottle of water. They put the rats in a cage. They had a bottle of water with pure water, and they had a bottle of water with heroin. It's a very strong narcotic. And all the rats in the cage, they would drink the heroin water until they end up killing themselves. So they would drink the heroin and they would eventually kill themselves. And the scientist said, well, they tried both waters, and once they discovered the heroin, they became addictive. Thus, heroin is innately addictive. But there was a hole in this philosophy, and they found that, well, people who have some injury, like they break their leg or something, and they go to the hospital, they give them these very strong narcotics to deal with the pain. And when these people leave the hospital, they no longer remain addicted to the heroin. So they did another experiment with the rats. And they put the rats in a cage with water, regular water, and heroin water. And they also included in that cage delicious foods, some sort of recreational activities, some other rats so that they could be social with. And they found that in that environment, they would not take the heroin. So once the rat had access to a higher taste, so to speak, a more healthy form of life, then there was no desire to take the heroin. What they found was the reason the rat was taking the heroin is because they're in this empty cage. So it's, you know, it's a matter of escapism. So with this process, this is both the acharyas, they give us two instructions. One is nivritti, things that we shouldn't do, like take heroin, right? And then there's also the pavritti, the positive instructions. And it's these positive instructions that are very powerful and potent in the spiritual process. Like Arjuna, for instance, he says, the senses are so strong, it's like my boat is on an ocean, like a sailboat, is it a sailboat? Or a boat, like any wave of the senses can easily disturb the boat. Just a single sense, and you've lost the game. Game over, you know. Mohini Murti, game over. That's maybe a bad example, but I've been meditating on that verse, so game over for me. Anyway. But so basically the senses are so strong that one cannot just try to escape from them. This process of simply abstaining from sense gratification, you cannot be successful. But by engaging in the higher taste, the pavritti, the instructions, you can. And there's different examples for this. So we can have a symptom, and then there's a perfect instruction that helps us deal with that symptom. So in the first verse of Nectar of Instruction, there's six urges. It's vacho vegam, the urge to speak, manasa krodha vegam. Manasa is mind, and krodha, so the urges of the mind. The mind is demanding certain things, so we follow the mind. Krodha is anger, so there's actions of anger. So speech, mind, anger. Then on the bodily platform, there is... So vacha vegam manasakrodha, jiva vegam, there's the urges of the tongue. Jiva vegam udaru pasta vegam, that's the stomach and genitals, those urges. So tapasvya is one who can actually control these urges. So the symptom of, for instance, an uncontrolled tongue, belly, and genitals, the symptom arises as sex desire. Now, these urges are described as being in a line. So there's the tongue, there's the belly, and the genitals. So it's said that if one cannot control the tongue, there's no question of controlling the belly and genitals. It's a straight line. So if the tongue is uncontrolled, then the other two will not be. So the symptom that may be there is maybe some like sex desire that may be coming, right? So the root is first control the tongue. So the nivritti instruction would be just abstain from speaking, right? Or abstain from eating. This is not possible. So we have to look at the pavritti instructions. So in terms of eating, we take Krishna prasad, right? And there's specific instructions. We take prasad, which is purifying, and we take it at scheduled times in the day. This is a very powerful instruction, just simply taking some food at scheduled times. See, then the tongue is more controlled. For instance, if we're just taking food at any time, then if we smell something nice, I'm feeling hungry now. Right? We think we're hungry because the tongue is just desiring. So we get fooled, so we just start eating. So eating at scheduled times will help in controlling the tongue. The other thing is that Prabhupada says, although we're taking Krishna prasad, we shouldn't do it with the attitude of enjoyment. And what's even mentioned in this verse is the prasadam prayer, which is a very powerful prayer. That this body is a lump of ignorance and the senses are very difficult to control, but Krishna is giving us this prasad just so that we can control our senses. And it's by Krishna's mercy that we're able to control our senses. So we're actually meditating on sense control while honoring Krishna prasad, which is a very powerful process. And then the urge to speak. Now, this is very difficult. I even noticed once I started taking this to heart, this, you know, control the senses. Don't eat prasad. I remember one day, or don't eat for just sense enjoyment. Don't eat prasad. Forgive me, that's not bona fide. But don't eat for sense enjoyment. I remember one day, I'm trying to follow this. Actually, the Brahmacharya Ashram as a whole, we've collectively decided that we're going to be more regulated as strictly as possible together, so we become empowered together. And one day I walked by the prasadam hall and the milk was there, the warm milk, and I said, oh, it looks very good. So I announced, well, the milk looks good, but I'm controlling my senses, so I won't take the milk. So on the one hand, I'm not drinking the milk because it tastes good, but on the other hand, I'm speaking about it. So the tongue is very active, so it's very difficult, especially that urge to speak. It's very powerful. It's said that, actually, even people who write scholarly books, right, or even reading the newspaper, like writing articles in the newspaper, it's actually a form of, it's because people cannot control that urge to speak, it's coming out any way possible. There's a couple of verses in this respect that it's very sweet. Yes. This is in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's canto 1, chapter 5, verses 10 and 11. I'll read verse 10, it says, those words which do not describe the glory of the Lord are considered to be saintly persons, like a place of pilgrimage for crows. So, Srila Prabhupada specifically refers to two types of speaking. One is about mundane materialistic things, and the other is impersonal philosophy. And this is a place of pilgrimage for crows. These are the kinds of speaking we're trying to avoid. And the kind of speaking that we want is, verse 11, it says, literature which glorifies the Lord is accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. So this is referring to Krishna Katha. That's the positive instruction. The way we control our tongue is actually by engaging in glorifying Krishna. And there's four ways that we glorify Krishna. Can someone maybe say, or I can? There's four ways we glorify Krishna. His devotees. I guess I'm looking for something pretty specific. So it's said that we glorify his name, form, qualities, and pastimes. And you'll find, like, different devotees. I remember especially some very senior devotees. Sometimes you'll meet a devotee, and every time you see them, they'll very ecstatically tell you, like, the same pastime. Like, they're just very attached to a particular pastime, and they have, like, no idea. Maybe they don't even know they've told you this pastime, like, 100 times before. And they're so enthusiastic about sharing it, like, it's the first time they've ever shared it. It's quite phenomenal. And you listen, and you're listening as if it's the first time you've heard it, you know. It's a matter of etiquette. Maybe you're not in the same mood, but we're like, you know, listening intensely. And so this person's completely absorbed, and you can see how positive that energy is. I remember when we were traveling in the van with Param Karuna. I mean, he spends a lot of time alone because he's traveling in a van distributing books. And he's constantly hearing, while he's eating, he's hearing a lecture or some Krishna book. And we were traveling him, we stopped at a devotee's home, Advaita Charanam, and yes. And when we came there, they were on a conversation with Ashutosh, and they were talking about Krishna book. So, if anyone's, you know Ashutosh, he's a devotee, he comes to the temple, and he loves talking about Krishna. He's like a walking Prabhupada purport. He'll tell you a pastime, and he'll give you like 3 Bhagavad Gita verses that supports the lesson you should hear from it, and he's in complete ecstasy. And just spending a few moments with him is very spiritually empowering. So this is a very powerful instruction. We can see it in how it's affecting the devotees who are engaged in this activity. And so we can follow in their footsteps as they are. They're following in the footsteps of the acharyas and they're following these instructions. And in this way, the mind becomes controlled as well. It's a win-win here. The senses become controlled and the mind becomes controlled. So the senses are being controlled because the tongue is involved, right? The tongue being the source of all these bodily urges, it's being controlled. And the mind is also being controlled. And there's also a very nice verse from the Srila Prabhupada's purport of the first instruction, which I will find. So this is from Madhya Lila. It's 22:31. And it says, Krishna Surya Sama Maya Haya Andakara Yahan Krishna Tahan Nahi Mayara Adikara. The translation is that Krishna is just like the sun, and Maya is just like darkness. If the sun is present, there is no question of darkness. So in the mind, when Krishna's katha is present in the mind, then there's no space for ignorance, for darkness in the mind. The symptom that the mind is uncontrolled is two things leading to anger. One is that the mind is constantly involved in planning. This is avirodha priti, unrestricted attachments, plans based on material desires. So we have these attachments that Marcel was speaking about. We're attached, we're bound to the modes. And the mind is planning. So the mind has desires and it's planning. On the lecture Saturday, Prabhu was saying that there's lust, greed, and anger. So the greed element is there. The mind is planning on how to enjoy. Then there's virodha yukta krodha, anger arising from frustration when plans fail. So the mind is active trying to plan on how to enjoy. And then the mind, it becomes frustrated when those plans aren't met. They aren't successful. So on a gross level, we kind of understand this, but it's even happening on a subtle level. Subal Prabhu was telling me some time ago, like, we were discussing it, and it comes where even as devotees, we start making plans. And it's there on a subtle level that we want things to go our way, and we have this idea, and the mind is very active about kind of persisting that it's kind of, I want it to happen this way, and this is the way it should happen. And then it doesn't happen that way, we get frustrated, and so the mind is constantly disturbing us in that way. So Krishna Katha really helps a lot. The other dimension that's happening with Krishna Katha is that we're doing it in the association of devotees. In the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, I know that's a large body of literature, but somewhere there it's saying that whenever you're involved in Krishna Katha with the devotees, there's no enemies among you. So the power of Krishna Katha is there, and that is any animosity or ill feelings between people disappears, right? So the sun is the presence of the sun, of Krishna, and darkness cannot exist alongside the sun. So, are there any reflections or thoughts? I kind of just didn't really.
Thank you, Prabhu. That was really excellent class. Thank you. You made a lot of excellent points. I wish I could ask more than one question, but I'll just stick to one. You were mentioning how to control the speech from the Netha of Instruction. One quote I really appreciate in this regard that I saw online, it basically says, "Nothing will give you greater peace than minding your own business." And the reason I appreciated this quote, because in light of the pastimes in the Bhagavatam, you were mentioning the external being controlled by yoga maya and maha maya, internal and external potency. So we see in this pastime that from an external point of view, Lord Shiva appears to be controlled by the, you know, the external potency. He's acting like any other conditioned soul. And then we also see a pastime where Padishan Maharaj was, when he was hunting in the forest, the whole reason of Bhagavatam was spoken is he was hunting in the forest and came across the cottage of a sage. And the sage was in meditation. And Padishan Maharaj wanted some water, but the sage, you know, was absorbed in his meditation. He didn't hear him. So Padishan Maharaj acted like a conditioned soul. He became, you know, furious, upset, and put a snake on his, you know, around his neck to disrespect him. And in the first canto, chapter 19, I forgot which verse, but Prabhupada mentions that, you know, great souls like that normally don't act like that way, but the only reason he acted like that was because it was ordained by the Lord. So from an external point of view, it's very hard to determine who's controlled by the external potency, and because we don't know what lessons Krishna is orchestrating for different devotees. So my question essentially is that how important is it to, how important would you say is it to at least pray for each other's well-being? Like, we don't, sometimes I think we underestimate the ability to well-wish others, to pray for their well-being, because when we want to get revenge, we don't mind praying for their downfall, using that potency. So how much is it better to, how significant is it, or can you think of any verses, or how important is it just what wishing others well? It doesn't matter how they treat you. So can you expand on that point a little bit?
Yes. It reminds me of something I heard of a very nice devotee who I spent some time with in Mayapur. It's Brihat Mridanga Prabhu. He's a brahmacharya from South Africa. So he said, if we want to stop offending the devotees, see, that's the negative instruction. Don't offend devotees. Pretty difficult. On the mental platform, it's happening a lot. He said, if we want to not offend the devotees, we can appreciate them. So, and in this case, you're giving another example that instead of wishing for, by actively wishing for something good to happen to a devotee, it's, you know, naturally cuts off the tendency to maybe wish for them to experience difficulty. Well, if only you experienced difficulty, you would learn the lesson I think you should learn. That's the attitude, right? I want you to learn this, so I'm waiting for you to go into difficulty so you can learn what I think you ought to be learning. Yeah. And that's happened, yeah. So having positive thoughts about the devotees is probably good. We had a meeting yesterday, the brahmacharis, with Gokulananda Prabhu, and we talked about working as a team, and well, we were talking about what our goal was here, and what emerged was this mutual desire to be successful together. And Jordan spoke a bit about it. It's very powerful about that, and how we all wanted to express our desires, and we want to help each other get to that point, because we cannot do it alone. In terms of actually citing a shloka, I just now thought of one. In Vaishnava K, it's a poem by Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. Thakur, about, it means, what kind of devotee are you? And the first several, four, five, or six stanzas to that poem and purports very much emphasize this point that you cannot do it alone. And the worst thing is to think that you can do this process alone. And it's warning you, never leave the devotees. It's giving a very grave warning. Never leave the association of the devotees. Never think you can do this on your own. So, acknowledging that we really need each other, and it will help a lot. And if the people around me are not, you know, their goals are Krishna conscious. So by helping them achieve their goals, then I can achieve mine. Because their goal is to create a Krishna conscious environment, right? Our goal is to make devotees and to become devotees. So I can become a devotee by associating with devotees. They can be devotees by associating with those people who are becoming devotees. So we're all on the same team here. So that's a good attitude to have. Srila Prabhupada says that advancement in Krishna consciousness depends on the attitude of the follower. It's a very powerful statement. He doesn't even give more explanation to that. He just leaves it as that in the purport. It says, advancement in Krishna consciousness depends on the attitude of the follower. It's complete. Hare Krishna. Any other questions or reflections?
You were citing 1st Canto, chapter 5, verse 10 to 15. Was that it, Prabhu? What, you want to repeat that?
10 and 11.
10 and 11.
Repeat them?
If you'd like.
Sure. Those which do not those words which do not describe the glories of the Lord are considered by saintly persons to be a place of pilgrimage for crows. That's kind of an abridged version. I kind of took the beginning and end and put them together.
Similar, there was a verse in the 11th canto. Whatever you wish to describe that is separate in vision from the Lord simply reacts with different names and forms. As a boat on the water has no as the boat on the water has no resting place. That was in the 11th canto. So it's similar, you know. But thank you.
Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Mm-hmm.